Today's audiocast for Friday, May 5th, 2006 is made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. I'm Mike Blakeney, reporting for AvWeb's Audio News Service. Later in this report, we'll recap the highlights of AvWeb's Thursday edition. But first, AvWeb's Mary Grady talks with Phil Boyer, president of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, about user fees and pilot relations with the FAA.
General Aviation traditionally has paid their contribution to the system through fuel taxes. Is there a chance that the FAA could just maintain that system, or are they really determined to see a change?
Whatever the FAA proposes, and we're kind of waiting for that proposal, we thought it would be out by now. Remember, it isn't the FAA that will decide this, it's Congress that will have to vote on this. So the nice thing is, we have the luxury of 400,000 plus members at AOPA to weigh in with their elected officials on the federal level next year, and once we know a firm proposal. My guess is that the general aviation, as the typical AOPA member knows it, the piston-powered airplane that you may own or rent, is not going to see a dramatic change in the way the funding occurs. Could be that it would be a large tax increase. Yes, that would be dramatic. But probably they will not abandon the very efficient fuel tax system. From there on up, Mary, it's up for grabs. Could it be that user fees will apply to the airlines, to business aviation? Would it be that user fees apply to the airlines only? Would it be user fees apply to business aviation and any piston-powered airplane that flies IFR? I don't know, because there is no proposal yet. There's just a lot of a rhetoric and talk. The one thing I'm sure, and that's why we've been so hard over on addressing this issue early on, and sensitizing people to it, is that if we got off scot-free, those of us, let's say, who own 172s, do we really want to think that short-sighted? Once such a system of funding is established, nowhere in the world has it not crept down into other aspects of aviation. So it might start in the initial legislation as airlines. We would dramatically oppose that, because after the airlines, then it may be business aviation, and after business aviation, it may float down to IFR flights. And eventually, as happening right now in some parts of the world, New Zealand is a good example, and in Europe, they are now even calling for VFR user fees, even though the system started out mainly with the airlines.
The worst case scenario that people see of a private pilot having to pay a fee to file a flight plan or to get a weather briefing or anything like that that might affect safety of flight, do you see that as a pretty unlikely scenario?
Well, nothing's completely unlikely, but for the first round of this debate, I do see that as an unlikely scenario. I do see user fees creeping in, and we've had rumor of some of the things that are in the bill that the FAA is going to propose but hasn't been made public yet. We do know that there may be fees for using large airports. There may be fees for Class B airspace. Once again, it's this sneaking these things in or letting them creep in, and best to just say no user fees for any segment. Our efficiently collected taxes should remain in place. And right now, you know, I probably have everyone listening incensed enough to say, I got to call my congressman. Well, kind of hard to do that because there is no bill number to tell them about. Congress isn't even thinking about this at the time. If you look at the House of Representatives, they're all up for election in November. So there's a very limited congressional schedule this year. And in the Senate, a third are up. So once again, this will be more of a 2007 issue. But if you were to get lucky enough to go to some picnic during the spring or summer and do meet your elected official, the one thing is when you go to a user fee system, when you eliminate the taxes, you remove Congress's role. And this is one thing that I think the airlines and the FAA would like to see. They remove Congress being the board of directors of the FAA, and when you go to user fees, not taxes, you now have to have a corporation of some kind that has elected board members. Where do you think those board members would mainly come from? General aviation? Well, there probably would be one or two of a 12-member, 13-member board, but where would the remainder come from? The airlines. And if a board then were to set future fees to make changes in the capacity of the system, look at the issues like first come, first served, which has served our country well in air transportation, we would end up with a board of directors being outside of the Congress. And so right now, anybody who had a chance to weigh in on this, because there are no specifics, just the fact that if you do change the funding stream and it does go to some fee structure of any kind for any group of users, we can't see that happening because we don't want to lose your oversight. So we'd like to keep that going.
Do you think there is a need for some kind of change in the FAA funding as far as pilots have seen changes in service? It's hard to get certification for new airplanes. And is that because the FAA needs more money, or are there other issues really that are causing these problems?
Really good question. And obviously, money takes care of a lot of things. The FAA burns through about $14 billion a year right now. One of the things we are advocating is let's look at the FAA cost structure. Is it possible for the FAA to trim their budget and provide services or enhance services? A perfect example, and once again, this wasn't by chance. This was because we knew that people would start looking at the cost general aviation was causing the system. AOPA, very untrue to its past history, supported the change of allowing the flight service station system to be outsourced to Lockheed Martin. What we've ended up in the first 6 months of that outsourcing, first of all, it's going to save $2.2 billion over 10 years. Number two, the phones are being answered by the metrics that we receive, because we're watching very closely what's happening with this. The phones are being answered in half of the time they were previous when it was in the FAA totally. The abandon rate on the phone calls is less than half of what it was. So it's a good example of how you can modernize the system. The FAA can look at its individual components and in many cases save money and provide better service. But at the same time, the FAA is crying, oh, our trust fund is running out of money. Just this week in San Diego at the Airport Executives Conference, I spoke to 500 people and outlined for the first time some work we've been doing for the last 2 months in which using the President's Budget Office numbers, the FAA in the next 5 years will have a $4.2 billion surplus in the most conservative look and up to almost a $10 billion surplus if ticket prices continue to rise and if the general fund contribution from the government remains the same. So there are a lot of facts here to produce. We're producing them because as we enter this lengthy battle, don't want to just give rhetoric or no, not us, but really paint a picture that any business person would paint if they were looking at changing the basic funding infrastructure of their corporation.
You've been listening to Mary Grady's interview with Phil Boyer, president of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. In AvWeb's Thursday edition, we covered the crash of an Airbus A320 that went down in the Black Sea on Wednesday morning. All 113 aboard died. The Armenian airliner was making its second attempt to land at an airport on the Russian coast in stormy weather. In the crash of a Canadair corporate jet in November 2004, the National Transportation Safety Board blamed the crew. In a report released this week, NBC Sports executive Dick Ebersol and two of his sons were on the jet when it went down in Colorado. One of the boys, age 14, died, as did the captain and a flight attendant. The crew did not adequately check the wings for ice before taking off, according to the NTSB. Rising fuel costs are causing problems in all sectors of aviation and in all parts of the world. In the U.S., every time the price of a barrel of oil goes up by a dollar, that translates into a $365 million hike in fuel costs for the 11 major airlines. In China, the demand for jet fuel is expected to nearly double by 2010. Chinese airlines are feeling the impact of rising fuel prices and have imposed surcharges for passengers. They have also implemented fuel-saving strategies such as more direct flights, higher cruise altitudes, and stricter controls on baggage weight. While airlines can pass along their cost to customers, the private pilot has no place to turn but his or her own bank account. A report posted Wednesday at airnav.com showed the average price nationwide for 100 low-lead avgas was $3.95 a gallon, but prices ranged from $2.50 to $6.73. The cheapest region was in the central U.S., averaging $3.71, and the highest were Alaska and New England, averaging well above $4 a gallon. The Eclipse 500 light jet is on track to receive FAA certification by the end of this quarter, meaning by June 30th, just about 8 weeks away, Eclipse Aviation said on Tuesday. The company also said the jet will meet targets for low aircraft noise, engine smoke emissions, and cabin sound. And just days after the death of test pilot Scott Crossfield, one of his colleagues, Alvin White, also passed away. Alvin White, who was Crossfield's boss at North American during the heyday of supersonic flight testing, died over the weekend. He was 88. For more details on these and other stories about FAA technology, notable aviation records, and parts falling off airplanes in flight, go to avweb.com and click on the link for Newswire Complete Issue. If you'd like to comment on any of our stories, send us an email to audionews@avweb.com. This report was made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. Click on the AudioCast sponsors link for more information. Look for AvWeb's next AudioCast Monday, May 8th. I'm Mike Blakeney.